Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today. So let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan, and today I have got a talk about wool and a talk about embroidery, charity quilts, and retreats. And guess what? Everybody I'm talking to is from Minnesota. I think that's just amazing, considering how I book things. It just happened that way. It was the All Minnesota Day. So first thing I'm going to do is talk about wool. Darlene Smith from One Wing Wool is a wool expert. She loves wool, works with it all the time, and I figured this time of year when it's getting a little cooler for most of us, it's going into fall, a lot of us have wool or want to have wool. We look at that yummy stuff and we're like, you know, how can we use this in our quilting? So Darlene is going to give me all the info we need to get us going on wool. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, Pat. How are you today?
I'm great. You know, how long have you been working with wool?
I would say probably about 10 to 12 years now.
Wow. That's that makes you an expert. That's for sure.
Well.
do you just work with wool?
No, I started out with quilting as kind of my main hobby, but I still quilt. And I do a lot of wool applique, and I also rug hook with wool, too. So,
oh, yeah. It sort of takes over, doesn't it?
It kind of has.
Wool has just such a wonderful feel when you touch it.
It does. I think it's the texture and the color saturation that's just so enjoyable to work with.
Now, do you mix your wool and cottons?
I do. A lot of times I will use cotton for maybe a background for the runner as the base. I do kind of like to mix the textures. And sometimes I'll use like a home decorator fabric, which is a little heavier. I think that matches up well with the wool as well.
So let's talk some details about wool, because people, you know, let's sort of go for the basics. You know, the people who have seen it in the stores, admired the projects, but are like, oh my gosh, you know, do I want to get involved with this? Is it hard? Is it difficult? You know, what's sort of a jumping off way for people to try wool?
Well, I think probably a smaller project, maybe a pincushion or a small mat would be something. And I find with my business where I start out with people is a kit. It takes mm-hmm. kind of the stress of picking the wools out. You don't have to felt them yourself. So that's just kind of a good starting point. I think it takes a little bit of the apprehension away for people.
Tell me a little bit, Darlene, talk a little bit about the wool itself, because you just hit key on it with mentioning kits, because in a kit, you know, you're getting wool that's appropriate to use, but there's all kinds of wool out there. How do people know what's the proper weight, you know, like a slacks weight versus a pea coat weight wool?
Right. Typically with the applique, you're working with what's called a flannel weight, which is a thinner, probably you would liken it more to like a slacks, a coat weight wool. It could maybe be good for a background or a base of a table runner, but that might be just a little bit too heavy. So you do want a thinner wool to work with. And a lot that's available now, especially in the quilt shops, you're going to find you can purchase the wool on the bolt, which it has not been felted, which means mm-hmm. that it's not been washed and dried yet. Or you're finding a lot of gorgeous hand-dyed wools, and those are already felted in the process. Those are good ones to work with. It's probably easiest for a beginner to get their hands on something that's already been felted.
Yeah, I agree, because if you don't know how to prepare it, it's very flat.
Yeah, it just doesn't have that fluff to it, and it's not a difficult process to felt it. It's just a matter of putting it in the washer with warm water, a little bit of detergent, and it's that agitation, but then putting it in the dryer. And you typically want to do that probably with some towels that kind of fluffs it up, gets those fibers to shrink, and then you just get that gorgeous texture, and then take it out of the dryer right away so you don't have the wrinkling. So it's not that difficult, but it's just one more step that a new person's got to deal with.
right, because it's not quite like cotton. And also, when you buy the wool, like if you buy a fat quarter that's like a hand-dyed or it's already been felted, it's actually already shrunk, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so I know people will say, well, it doesn't measure like a fat quarter of cotton. It's like, well, the shrinking has already happened. So
yeah, and a lot of people get confused, too. The wool, it felt so differently. So a fat quarter is not always going to be the exact same dimensions every time. Every wool felt differently, some tighter, some looser. I mean, when I'm hand dyeing, I can lose 3 inches on a yard from the felting. So just kind of keep that in mind if you're buying those fat quarters and you need a specific size, open them up and measure them to make sure you're getting what you need.
Oh, that's an excellent tip. Yeah, because people just assume it's one size. And
yeah, it's a little bit different. And some of the bolts do come a little bit different sizes now, too. They've typically been 60 inches salvage to salvage, but I'm seeing even shorter ones now in some of the things that I'm ordering.
So let's talk about how you get the project together. You know, if people look at like a penny rug or like you call them a mat, you know, they have, it's like a table runner or a small little sort of trivety type.
Yeah, size. Little decorative mat.
Yeah, so you have to get the shape, the applique shape, whether you're putting a house or a flower or something onto the background. What are the different ways that people normally do that? What kind of stitch?
The stitches? Well,
yeah.
you can use, I think typically most people have always done a blanket stitch or a buttonhole stitch, but I like to kind of move away from that, and I like to use little X's or even just a whip stitch. Sometimes a blanket or a buttonhole is just too heavy for a little tiny applique piece, so sometimes just a little whip stitch around the edge is all it really needs.
And a whip stitch would just be coming up and going back down.
Right back around the side of it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so there isn't really any extra thread running along the edge.
Exactly. You don't have that horizontal piece of thread like you do with a button or a blanket hole.
Now, because the wool's, you know, it's fluffy, some of it, a lot of it, do you need thicker thread usually?
You want to, when you're work stitching down your applique pieces, you want to move into an embroidery floss rather than just a thread. So there's the standard DMC floss that everybody can find everywhere, and there's 6 strands in that when you purchase it. I will usually divide down to 3 strands to work with. Now, there are the gorgeous hand-dyed variegated cotton flosses out there that are only single strand, Valdani, Caron, there's a number of them out there which are just lovely to work with. But so those are a single strand, but typically DMC, just 3 strands of that is enough.
Yeah, because if you had less than 3, it would sort of sink into the wool, wouldn't it?
It does. When you're doing your stitches, you almost want to plan for them to be just a little bit bigger than you think, because the wool with that fluff and that felting does kind of absorb the stitch a little bit. But that's where you get a nice little pucker, too, you know, almost like a quilting does with a quilt.
Now, how do you get the shape, you know, what is your preferred way of adhering the applique shape to the background? Do you hand baste it, glue, fuse?
Well, let me step back one step. To actually get your applique pieces into the shape that you want, a heart, a flower, whatever, the technique that I like to use is to trace my pieces out on fusible web. And I like a heat and bond light is the one that I prefer. It's not too stiff. You can needle through it nicely. So once you've got your template piece drawn onto your fusible, you fuse that onto the back of your wool. And I will say that wool doesn't really have a front or a back. But when you're working with hand-dyed wool, sometimes there's a really neat modeled piece on the front or on one side or another that you really want to use, maybe on a leaf or something. So just you want to make sure that you're pointing your fusible onto that, the reverse side of that. And then cut out your pieces and pull away the paper backing. You can get rid of that. And then the way that I like to adhere it down is with a little bit of maybe like an Aileen's tacky glue or Roxanne glue based, just a smidge on there to hold, and then you can get all your applique pieces down on your background. And that's the technique that I like to use.
So what do you do with the leftovers? Because I find that people just don't, scraps.
You just have a great scrap basket to pull from. I keep all those little scraps. I mean, granted, if they're little teeny tiny, I get rid of them. But you just never know when you just need a teeny little piece of something, an odd little color to just perk up a flower or some little spot. So I really do hang on to all those little pieces. And quite honestly, wool's expensive, so why get rid of it? You know, you can always use those little pieces later.
And I think that's the reason why with wool, people or even people who don't even keep cotton scraps will, you know, tiny cotton scraps will keep tiny wool scraps because it is a more expensive fabric to buy.
It is a little bit more pricey. And I think in then the hand dyed, you know, that kind of weighs into it too. You're basically paying for somebody's time to physically hand dye all those pieces of wool. It's not done on a big piece of machinery. It's done in a pot in somebody's kitchen. So
Yeah. So tell me about the little tiny pieces, because I know you have some tricks for working with small wool pieces.
Well, that kind of goes back to using that fusible web as a background. I like the fusible because it's a great way to transfer your pattern, you know, from your paper and get that wool template piece. But working with the fusible allows you to cut such intricate pieces because it keeps the edges kind of stabilized on your wool, so they're not, you know, with wool, it felts at different rates. So sometimes you're going to get a little bit more fray on the edges of some felted wools than others. But if you've got that fusible on the back, it kind of keeps everything together. So I find that using that fusible really is an important step in if you want just little tiny intricate pieces.
Well, that's a good point. I never really thought about that, actually stabilizing it so that you could have a little tiny eye on a bird or teeny tiny berries.
And the points on stars stay really nice and sharp and pointy. I vended a lot of shows, and so my samples really get handled, and I've never had to remake a sample because they've been damaged due to. So I think it really helps.
that's a good point with the stars too, Darlene, because I know that the wool could split if you don't, you know, treat it properly when you're stitching. You could actually pull it apart.
Well, it's not only the wear and tear of just using the wool, you know, on a table runner or whatnot, but yes, the actual stitching, the needle could split it. So that I think it's a really good technique, and it's the one that I like to use and teach.
Oh, awesome. This is great, great tips, Darlene. Your website is onewingwool.com, and you go and you vend and you teach, right? So people can check it out?
Mm-hmm. I design patterns and wholesale them through quilt shops, so you may see them out and about. And it's really fun.
yeah. Oh, this is very, very gorgeous. So onewingwool.com. Darlene, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me today, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to take a little break and come back and talk some embroidery.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Introducing the new Bernina 7 Series machines with the latest sewing and embroidery innovations, including an extended free arm and embroidery area, the Bernina Stitch Regulator, and a world's first, the B9 Hook. Sew quieter, faster, and without interruption. With up to 1,000 stitches per minute and 80% more bobbin thread capacity than our standard bobbins, there's no limit to your creativity. For more information, visit Bernina.com/7 Series. Bernina, made to create.
The Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show is about to start. First up, the exotic fabrics of Cusco by Kate Spain and Chant, with rich fuchsia, indigo, and orchid. Do you hear that? It's the ocean breezes coming from the Seascapes collection by Deb Strain. It's no mystery. You'll love the Get a Clue with Nancy Drew line. Hearts and flowers and houndstooth, oh my. Kissing Booth by Basic Gray brings romance to the runway. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan. I have been checking out Urban Threads. It's an embroidery website. I've been looking at it for quite a long time because, you know, I do a lot of hand embroidery, but they do both a lot of machine embroidery and hand embroidery. But the machine embroidery really intrigues me because this is not your typical designs that you see that, you know, usually have flowers and things like that. These are really creative, very funky, and as the name says, urban. So I thought it would be wonderful to have Neve, who is the art director, come on from Urban Threads and tell us a little bit about why she loves embroidery and what Urban Threads is all about. So hi, Neve. How are you?
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me. I'm good.
I'm just so excited. I love your designs. It's probably the reason why I would try out the embroidery unit on my sewing machine.
That's very exciting for you to say. I mean, I think it's really great that we can get new people interested.
Yeah, so tell me how you personally got interested in embroidery.
Well, you know, it's kind of the opposite way that a lot of people find it. I started in art. I went to art school for illustration, and I kind of accidentally fell into the embroidery field. I got an internship at an embroidery company as an artist. Mm. And I kind of found out this great new medium that I'd never really known anything about before. And the only thing was that I was kind of interested in doing different kinds of designs. Mm-hmm. And so I approached the boss I was working for at the time, and I said, look, I really love this, but I really want to stitch, like, skulls and, you know, crazy weird things on my clothes. And can I draw those kinds of things too? And, you know, it was just an amazing partnership that we kind of started up, and we started Urban Threads only about 6 months after I started full time. So it
wow.
was, it was a great leap. It was really fun.
That's great vision that you had, Neve, that there was a need for, embroidery that wasn't your traditional embroidery.
Right. Well, I mean, it was an interesting kind of leap because I knew that I liked that, but, you know, mm-hmm. it wasn't really out there. So I just didn't know, you know, was there an audience for it or not? And it turns out there's a big audience for it. You know, there's a lot of people out there looking just for something different.
Now, tell us a little bit about the type. You mentioned skulls, you know, and that's, you know, sort of like the, you know, not the pirate thing, but, you know, more of the sort of tattoo art kind of, I think of it. But you also have, I just love, like, the free pattern today is, has, like, a bulldog with glasses, and you say geek like it's a bad thing. I mean, it's just, like, I relate to that. I can do that for my brother. That is so cute. So tell me about the type of designs that your company creates.
I think a lot of stuff of what we do is, I guess, like counterculture kind of stuff, just anything that's a little bit offbeat, a little bit different. We love geeky stuff. We love kind of off the mainstream stuff. Anything that if we can't find it on another website anywhere else, that's the kind of thing we like to do. And so, I mean, I think a lot of people when we first started thought, well, they're the people that do skulls. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there that doesn't get covered. There's a big trend rising that's called steampunk, which has become uh-huh. very popular for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like different themes and motifs like that, and keeping it, I think, elegant and sophisticated and getting away maybe from some of the cutesier stuff kind of appeals to, you know, people that aren't stitching for kids, or maybe they're trying to stitch for guys and they just don't want the cutesy stuff anymore.
Right. I mean, even like your holiday things are just not, like you said, they're not really cute. They just have a little bit of an edge. You've got some great Halloween things since, you know, we're in October. Your spider webs, your cat on a pumpkin with this fabulous witch's hat. I mean, and they're just, you know, really, you know, different. And I just want to do them all. I just... So what would you suggest that a new person to embroidery, how would they approach it if they've mostly a quilter and they have this embroidery thing on their machine? What do you suggest that someone like me does to get started?
Well, I think the thing that gets really tempting about embroidery is there can be some really big, beautiful, dense designs that you can see on websites. And I think some people will maybe download that design and try and stitch it on a T-shirt and wonder why it comes out really bad. And so I think it really helps to start with lighter designs, simple designs. I think because a lot of people start on, like, tea towels and T-shirts. Mm-hmm. So we have a style that we call scribbles, okay, which is basically, like, a variation of a typical running stitch design, except it's a little more freehand looking. Mm-hmm. And so we've often asked people to, you know, try in this with this because it's just if you use a basic stabilizer on pretty much any kind of fabric, including T-shirts, you'll be able to stitch it on your machine and, you know, just get comfortable with it before you really try and ruin your favorite sweatshirt, you know, if you're not quite sure how to use stabilizer or anything like that. But we have a whole bunch of tutorials on our site, too, for helping people who are just starting out on the machine, because we have a lot of people who are definitely completely new to the medium. They don't know anything about it. They just might have seen, you know, our stuff on a jacket, and they're just like, how do I do that?
Right, right. So what? Tell me a little bit about the stabilizers, because some people do use those for hand embroidery, but for machine embroidery, it's pretty mandatory, isn't it?
It is absolutely mandatory.
Yeah. It's not like an optional thing like with handwork.
If you want your design to come out the way it's supposed to look like, you have to use some kind of stabilizer. And most of the time, there's cutaway stabilizers, the most typical stuff to use. That's what you're going to use behind most projects, and especially with really dense designs, you have to have a good cutaway. Sometimes you can use something what we call tearaway stabilizer, which is once you stitch the design, the stabilizer is kind of thin enough that you can tear it away from the edges. Mm-hmm. And this kind of helps on garments or lighter things when you don't want that really harsh outline of the stabilizer behind your project, you know, so you can see it through fabrics and stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you can only use that kind of stabilizer on lighter kinds of designs. Mm. Otherwise, you just get a lot of shifting and problems, and it can be kind of a headache. So I think some people struggle with, like, the line as to where you need to start using the heavier stabilizer and, you know, where it's okay with the lighter stuff. So we have a whole section of light stitching designs that are a little friendlier for lighter stabilizers. There's also stabilizers you can use behind, like, clothes and stuff. They're just softer. Mm-hmm. Than regular stabilizer, so like behind kids' clothes when you don't want to like irritate, you know, you want to stitch that cute onesie, but you don't want to irritate your kid when you put them in it. So those are also really great because they still hold up pretty well, but they're not as stiff as other stabilizers.
And when you were saying dense, you mean a design that would have like a lot of threading versus open?
Yeah, a lot of stitches. So basically it just means that the machine will go over the same area over and over and over again. And it just ends up, you know, the stitches kind of pile up, and it just leaves a lot of chance for puckering and shifting if you don't have a nice stabilizer behind, you know, your fabric.
Ah. Now, tell me a little bit about thread, because as a primarily a quilter, I primarily use cotton thread, but you probably are not using cotton thread.
No, we use like a poly rayon thread is traditionally the machine embroidery thread. It's kind of like a shinier thread than a lot of the cotton stuff. Mm-hmm. But it kind of depends on what you're stitching. Like that machine embroidery thread is pretty standard. But like when we've done series where we do lace designs, and that actually uses the same cotton thread as a lot of other sewing, you know, threads. And so it kind of just depends on what your project is for. But most of the time, machine embroidery thread is not the same as a regular like sewing thread or cotton thread. Most of the time you would use like a poly or a rayon thread.
Okay. All right. So I'd probably have to get a little, you know, thread education too to get the right thing so that it don't have it too heavy with the cotton.
Yeah, as long as it's not cotton, most of the time when you go to the store, you'll be able to find, there's usually a section devoted to machine embroidery thread, and anything in that section should probably stitch out pretty well.
Now, you have a whole section, don't you, for designs for guys?
We do. We have, designs that we've kind of categorized that can be used for guys. I mean, that's always a tough line to ride because I think there's a lot of stuff in there that I love, and, you know, and I'm a gal, but it's kind of things like tougher designs. We have stuff for grilling and biking and, you know, geeky stuff and just stuff that, you know, if you try and approach like a teenage boy and you're going to be like, okay, what do you want on a shirt? Like, he's not going to pick out a teddy bear. You got to give him something different to pick out. So that's something that we've heard a lot of, that they're like, I'm so excited. I can stitch for my husband. I can stitch for my kids. Or I just like these designs myself. I'm really glad you have something different.
Yeah, I think the Born to Ride is, you know, that would be my husband, the motorcycle one. That's really good. So do you have guys on staff for designing these?
We absolutely do. Yes, yep. We have a team of artists, and we have two guys who work pretty often on Urban Threads. We kind of share resources with Embroidery Library. We're all kind of part of the same company, which is kind of exciting, but we're one half of it. So we have two guys on staff, and it's usually if we try and do something for guys, I'll kind of show it to them and be like, would you actually wear this? Like, you know, you kind of need to have a second opinion. Like, is this guy friendly?
Right.
But I mean, if they're designing it half the time, I'm like, if you draw it, you must think it's pretty cool. So it's kind of good to have, we have about half and half girls and guys on the team.
Oh, that's great. I do think it makes a huge difference whether a guy looks at something and says, yeah, I would wear it versus, you know, us girls looking at it saying, yeah, I think he should wear it.
That's very different things, aren't they?
Yeah. And you also, for those people who really are not, you know, are thinking they don't really want to do this on the machine, you have a lot of your pieces that you can buy the designs as hand embroidery, which is a nice little option you have. And plus, you could just click it right on the top to see which in a category can be handwork.
And most, I would say 90 to 95% of our designs also come as hand embroidery designs. Mm-hmm. It's pretty rare unless we have things like specialized lace or something that's just way too complicated. That's not going to, you know, translate. But we have a ton of hand embroidery designs, and it's been really fun to see. I mean, what's really great is that we're probably one of the few places that has both those kinds of customers. Mm-hmm. So it's so fascinating to see how different stitchers interpret different designs.
Yeah.
You know, machine stitchers will make it their own with color, and hand embroiderers will make magical things out of their own hand stitches.
Neve, this has been just wonderful. Thanks for being on the show.
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
Everybody visit urbanthreads.com.
Looking for fresh,
this is
simple
American
and
Patrick
fun
and
projects
quilting.
And
we'll
ideas.
Be right back.
Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. These collections are hot, hot, hot. Fig Tree is back with a new collection called Tapestry, which weaves together Greek and Moroccan influences for a beautiful result. We're mad for the plaids in the WeWoven's Brights collection. Next, pull up an Adirondack chair and enjoy the Ocean View by Paul Brent. And finally, Three Sisters delivers a delicious helping of double chocolat with scrumptious colors of dark chocolate, cherry, caramel, and vanilla bean. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Introducing the new Bernina 7 Series machines with the latest sewing and embroidery innovations, including an extended free arm and embroidery area, the Bernina Stitch Regulator, and a world's first, the B9 Hook. Sew quieter, faster, and without interruption. With up to 1,000 stitches per minute and 80% more bobbin thread capacity than our standard bobbins, there's no limit to your creativity. For more information, visit Bernina.com/7Series. Bernina, made to create.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts and More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and I'm on to my third guest from Minnesota. So I have Roseanne Kermes from Rosebud's Cottage, and Roseanne is a regular contributor to American Patchwork and Quilting magazine families, and she comes on often to sort of chat with me about different things. So hi, Roseanne. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I love the fact that the other two guests were also from Minnesota, so we have our whole big Minnesota day here today.
I know. I can't believe it. I do.
Good planning.
I know. Yes, I planned all that. Yes, it'll be a state by state show from now on. don't hold your breath, anybody. I thought, Roseanne, we might talk a little bit about making quilts and things for charity, because when I first started quilting, I right away joined a guild, and then right away my guild had a sort of sub B within in the guild, a B that would do charity projects. And often when I first joined, those charity projects were to make a sort of bigger special quilt that we gave to a charity so that they could auction it off for funds, so that was a great fundraising type of charity quilt. And then over the years, I've been involved with making quilts for people and giving them to different charities and things like that. So I'm sure, you've done this over the years too, but did you start doing that right away when you were quilting?
I didn't start so much when I first started to quilting, but I did a lot when I opened my store. I think, a lot of stores do quilts, Project Linus or Quilts of Valor, because they have a lot of meaning to people. But quilts for fundraising are a great cause. They're easy to get raffle tickets sold and stuff. I have a friend who's a manager at a postal credit union, and one year for a fundraiser for the United Way, she made a quilt that was all done out of fabric that looked like money. And it was perfect for the banking industry, and they raised a lot of money for the United Way. But there's lots of different ways that people can take part. But I don't know about you. I think a lot of times people, they want to do something good. They want to make a difference, but they don't always have time to volunteer at organizations. And, because of family obligations or work or whatever. And being able to take part in, like Quilts of Valor, Project Linus, or a fundraiser like this, gives them that opportunity to give back a little bit. And I think women especially identify with needful situations where they want to make something that's going to help a situation and stuff. So,
right.
I think that's kind of, don't you think, like, why people feel good about the pillowcase challenge from American Patchwork?
I do. The 1 million pillowcase challenge it's not as difficult to help. You don't have to do a full quilt. You can do a pillowcase, but the pillowcases are really appreciated. The people who get them often don't have even like a tote bag to carry their stuff in at some places.
I know. And some of them use, like one of the homeless shelters that we give pillowcases to, we expect the recipient to take it with them, because often that's where they're putting their things, what they have, So I think
I was going to say, when they're given to like the cancer patients or the hospitals, it just brightens up a space so that it's not so sterile.
Exactly. Makes it just a little happier in a kind of a grim situation.
Yes. Yeah,
I think one reason, don't you think the pillowcase challenge appeals to people, because it's, first off, it's easier and you don't have to have a lot of skills to do it. So it makes it like so anybody can do it.
That blog hop that they just did was really fascinating to see. There were 30 different stops, and if you went along every day for the whole month of September of this year, 2012, you got to see how different people approached the whole philosophy of charity and making the pillowcases and who they gave them to and what they did with them. I found that for me, I did a pillowcase that went with a quilt that I'm going to give. So I partnered it up, and then I asked my internet group and I asked my Facebook friends if everybody else would also make a pillowcase.
Mm-hmm. So, and the day that it was my turn on the Blog Hop, I did tutorials on some of the different pillowcases just so people could see that they really weren't hard. Mm-hmm. And so that they weren't very time consuming. And the other thing is that you can learn some great skills by using the patterns that American Patchwork has on their website. You know, you can kind of tweak a technique and learn how to do it a little bit by practicing on something that's actually for a good cause. I love the one from ThermalWeb where they had the Girl Scouts, the two groups of Girl Scouts making pillowcases. That one was cute. And it's what a great way to show kids how to sew. They were pretty young. I don't think they didn't seem very old or very skilled, but they were having a great time in those pictures. And churning out those quilts.
I know. You know, and for the whole program, the 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge, American Patchwork is hoping to reach soon. We'd like to reach soon the 1 million pillowcases. We're at, right as I'm speaking, 440,805. And I believe on their blog, they said they added like 3,656, something like that,
that
during
was just,
the hop.
Just during the hop.
Yeah, just during the hop.
Yeah, and this number is a lot higher than when they first started the hop in early September. So I think what the Blog Hop did is create awareness in customers. I know many of my customers had sort of forgotten about it, or maybe they had been making pillowcases and forgot to go and go into the counter and add their total to it. It's not very hard. The link to add your number is right on the front page of the Pillowcase Challenge page. And it's real easy just to add in your pillowcases. Like you can add one, you can add 500. It really depends. And they're almost to the halfway point now. And it's exciting.
It is exciting. Yeah. It is exciting. And I was out just sort of looking around, and the one gal, Jen Eskridge, who is a author, a book author, she was telling on her blog in September that her guild, the San Antonio Modern Quilt Guild in Texas, their yearly 2012 charity incentive is to do pillowcases.
Nice.
Yeah. I thought that was really, really cool. So, you know, you've done a lot of things as groups. You know, because you have a store, you've organized a lot of different events with people coming in. How would you go about, like, for a pillowcase day, getting it sort of production line for people who might want to do this with the children or just with their buddies, maybe even people who don't sew very much?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I think is being organized. And I would bring, when I've done this in the past where we've had a big event like this, I've had people come in first and pre-cut enough pillowcase sets to get us going, because you don't want to have volunteers come in and then nobody really knowing what's going on. If you can bring them in and get them right away sewing and cutting and pinning, it's going for a smooth day. I like to have a sign-up sheet so when people come in, they can sign up at the skill that they want to do, if they feel comfortable. If it's just pressing or if they feel comfortable sewing, put them in that direction. And, you know, anybody can sew. If you're in a group situation or like in a public place, for instance, and there's lots of curious people, little kids are really good at sewing if they sit on somebody's lap. They love the experience of it. So, you know, that's something kind of fun to do.
That's a good point with putting them on your lap. I hadn't thought about that.
It's not that dangerous. And, you know, they mostly are fascinated with how the whole thing is, you know. So, you know, make it fun for them and get them engaged. It's always important to have enough stations for people to work at. Cutting tables, make sure you have them raised up. We'll put cans of vegetables or something underneath, or those table risers to get them up to a good height. And make sure that there's enough ironing boards for about 3 people per ironing board, because people hate to wait in line and waste their time. They don't feel like it's a good value for their volunteering. They want to see progress. Mm-hmm. I remember American Patchwork at one of their events started hanging up the pillowcases on clotheslines.
And
it's fun to see them, you know, snapping them up on a clothesline like that with clothespins, because it's so visual. So if you can have some way to show people the progress, that's really important, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did on their blog, speaking of that progress, you can see it on the editor's blog at American Patchwork and Quilting at allpeoplequilt.com. They had a basket, and they were piling them in, and they had like a flip number thing. And so there's a photo of it, and the basket is like really full in this picture, and it says 62. So at that point, they had 62 pillowcases in that, you know, for that day at that point. So it was like,
yeah,
wow.
It's fun to count it. It's kind of cool that way. You know, I think especially if you're working like tables against each other or race, that kind of thing. I really think it's important too to have a leader in different sections, like a leader who's in the pressing section, a leader who's in the sewing section or cutting. People have somebody to look to, and also somebody who can kind of push the work around to make it smoother. It really helps to get delegate that way. So
yeah, I would think too that the leader then, if there's somebody who's done some has a need for unsewing and they aren't very experienced, your leader could do the ripping out, because that's frustrating. Just let the person start like a new pillowcase, and your leader rips out the seam that's bad or the problem thing.
Well, because you want it to be a positive experience for everybody that takes part. First off, it's for a good cause, and also you just want to have that ego thing. People don't want to feel like they did a bad job, you know. So don't call attention to it.
Right.
Move them on to another one and just take care of it quietly.
Yeah. Now, people may not know where, you know, this is sort of an unusual charity event, the 1 million pillowcase, because you're working yourself and you're giving it to the charity of your choice. You're not sending it to a central place or anything like that. So on their website, For All People Quilt, they have a where to donate button that gives you some ideas. Where have you donated, Roseanne?
We recently took some to the Harriet Tubman shelter here just south of us in Maplewood. They have a lot of families going through. A lot of times if you ask at a church if they know of an organization that could accept the pillowcases, I think you have to get out of the mindset that only people in inner cities need these things. Situations are in the suburbs as well. I would look first to your city level or even your county level, the social services, to just see, you know, where is there some hidden need that maybe people aren't getting some recognition and stuff, and start there.
We're going to take a little break, Roseanne.
Okay.
I think this has been just wonderful to sort of recap after the blog hop and get people, you know, looking at this again and making pillowcases all year. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to start out with some tool talk.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Introducing the new Bernina 7 Series machines with the latest sewing and embroidery innovations, including an extended free arm and embroidery area, the Bernina Stitch Regulator, and a world's first, the B9 Hook. Sew quieter, faster, and without interruption. With up to 1,000 stitches per minute and 80% more bobbin thread capacity than our standard bobbins, there's no limit to your creativity. For more information, visit Bernina.com/7Series. Bernina, made to create.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan. I'm talking to Roseanne Kermes from Rosebud's Cottage, designer extraordinaire. So,
sure.
Why not? You know. So, Roseanne, this is the time of year that you and I and a zillion other people go to Houston. First, we have the trade show called Quilt Market. Followed right behind that is the big show called Quilt Festival, where all even more quilters come than come to the trade show. And you know, all of us, thousands and thousands and thousands of us, are looking for gadgets. I am sure everybody is, besides fabric. So I thought it'd be fun to just talk about a few gadgets that mostly you have seen recently, since I don't get to see as much as you do. But one of the things is, I asked you what you thought about a product out there that American Patchwork had in their magazine recently called a Swatch Buddy. What do you think about those?
They're pretty cool. They brought them out at the spring market in Kansas City, and you know, in the store, I can't tell you how many times a customer has left, and that one or two pieces of fabric that she was carrying around have fallen on the floor. She's been looking mm-hmm. for a certain color of fabric for months, and then now the crucial ones are gone. The thing about Swatch Buddies is it's a little piece of plastic that has this super sticky side to it, and you cut your piece of fabric out of it, stick it on there, and on the back side you can label what you're looking for, how much you're going to need for your project. It's on a little key ring, and you can hook it to your purse. You can put it on your keychain. The good thing is the pieces don't get lost, and that adhesive on there is very sticky. So they are a great product. And the nice thing about it too is it has refills. So it comes, I think it's 24 little mm-hmm. plastic discs. And I think you get on the 24 in a refill. I can't quite remember. They're affordable and great for coordinating your fabrics. I love them. So that's one product they can look for. So.
I think it's great. I need to have some, I think, because, you know, I've tied little, you know, strips onto my bag. And like you said, you know, you do untie them and then you end up losing them, or I've stuffed them down in my purse and I can't find them when I'm in the store, you know. So it's
It's frustrating. And I think that product is a genius solution for that. So, yeah, that one was pretty cool. Another one that we just got into the store, and I wish I had three times as many as I had for our wool club the other day. It's called the Ultimate Marking Pencil, mm-hmm. and it's shaped sort of like a Crayola is, and you can actually use a Crayola sharpener to keep the point sharp. But it's made for writing on dark fabric and marking on dark fabric. So
Yay.
We were passing around swatches of wool in our wool club the other day, and people were writing on it, and oh my gosh, they were loving it. It irons out. And we did a little test later. Somebody asked about residue on your iron. Nothing on my iron. So it was a great, great product, and they're back ordered. So I'm dying.
You're dying. Yeah, everybody's got a big long line for the Ultimate. Who makes those?
That one is from a manufacturer called Hansi Manufacturing.
Okay.
It's kind of an obscure little product, but great if you can find it. So hopefully at festival some people will have that if you're into working with dark fabrics or working with the wool. Another one that is a red hot product right now is called Seam Fix, and it's a seam ripper on one side, and then on the other side is this little kind of plastic rubber tip And after you go and use your seam ripper to slice your threads, you go, use the little rubber tip and run it along those loose threads, and it pulls them all out. It's
oh my
magic.
Gosh.
I know. I'd bring you one, but hey, guess what? We're out again.
What's with that? That's,
I know.
I'm going to be looking at the show. Wow.
That product's from Tacony, so,
yeah.
Or Tacony, rather. So that's kind of,
yeah.
They're a cool one.
And you had another one you told me about.
Yeah, my new favorite, and I've used it all the time, is the folded corner clipper. I used it when I did the flying geese on my pillowcase for the pillowcase block up.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you have to do like a corner flip where you are drawing on the line and then you have to sew just a thread to the side,
yeah.
I'm horrible at it. My seams are always wobbly and I get really frustrated. Well, this tool, you put your square on your background like you would for a, you know, when you're doing a corner flip, and you lay the template on the square, measure, you know, line it up with the edges so that it's even. And then you slice off your corner, and the quarter inch is automatically built in. Dog ears are trimmed off. It is so fast, and it's very accurate. I just did a project where I needed a bunch of them, and it was perfect. I love it. My favorite. Yep. So, if people want to see how it's used, they can go to the blog hop and just look on my page for my project, and they'll be able to see how to use it, because I had a little demo there how to use it. So.
Oh, neat. I got to go check that out again. Oh, I think you even had one other thing you told me. There's a new smell for the best press spray.
New smell from Best Press, peaches and cream. I haven't smelled it. Sounds delicious.
Oh.
My favorite is still the unscented, but people love the fragrances. I guess the lavender, I like that one a lot too. So
they just
brought that out. So another Minnesota company, they're right here in the Twin Cities. So
oh, you're kidding! I didn't know that.
I know.
Oh,
we have geniuses here.
You should all just move there with you. That's,
folded corner clipper. She's from Minnesota as well. So southern part of the Twin Cities. So it's a great thing. So
you, besides getting ready to go to the trade show, you are knee deep in retreat planning since you host a lot of retreats. How's that going?
Try not to breathe into the paper bag. my goal is to have a lot of the prep work done. I'm probably a little unique. I make a lot of little prizes and gifts for my customers for our retreat. So, deep into making them some special things. So I'm excited about it. I love the retreat. It's very fun to put on. It's exciting to have your customers wanting to come to your retreats and wanting a weekend to just quilt. And that's the best part of it for me.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people love retreats, is because when you go away like that, you're not in your regular environment where you get interrupted for this, that, and the other. And the people just go there and just so like crazy people.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Well, on Saturday, I sent out a retreat letter, and I included a list of things that they need to make sure they never forget when they come to a retreat, because you wouldn't believe
how this
happens.
Share the list.
The cord for your sewing machine, your foot pedal, and don't forget your feet for your sewing machine. Oh, my gosh. It's so sad to see people that have driven for hours because they don't have what they need for the whole weekend. Sometimes you're lucky if there's a sewing machine placed near you, but those are the first three things never to forget. And even if you think that they're already in your bag, like your sewing machine tote bag, look again, because you'd be surprised. Throw in some extra bobbins and sewing machine needles. You never know when you're going to run over something and wreck all your needles. So just bring all that stuff, because your sewing machine is your most important tool for your retreat. So, another thing I tell people to do is make sure they mark their stuff. A rotary cutter is a rotary cutter. They all sort of look the same unless you have a little piece of fabric tied onto yours, or your name written on the blade, or your name written into your ruler or your mat. Make sure you have that. And don't forget to bring extension cords and power cords, those power outlet boxes.
Right.
You know, sometimes retreat places have plenty, but you never know. So they're not that hard to pack. Bring those along.
And lighting.
Yeah. you know, we're lucky that the place we have is pretty good light, but most people bring either a battery-operated or a portable Ott light, something that's easy to transport. You know, the thing is, you don't want to bring so much stuff that you don't have room for your projects, because right. your projects are the next important thing after the sewing machine. And, you know, one thing that I think is important is if there's a project that you're working on, get it cut before the retreat, because there's so much laughing and talking going on. I find it impossible to cut from the beginning when I go to retreat. You know, I just put it all in a bag, make sure you have the pattern and the supply list. Mm-hmm. And any wonky supplies that you need for that or special threads, make sure that's all in that bag, you know, so bring it all along. And extra fabric. Don't forget that, too, because,
So
you could make mistakes.
Let's just do, like, we only have, like, about a minute. Give me, like, your top three etiquette things that people, or maybe one or two more, for being a good retreat member.
Be a good table mate. You know, kind of keep, if you're sharing a table with somebody else, try and keep your area sort of clean and not spread out too much. But I think the most important one is remember that somebody else put in a lot of time and thought into the retreat. And if you don't like the way certain things are, try not to be critical, because that person has given up a lot of their time to try and make it a good, you know, good, enjoyable adventure for you too. So, you know, be a little bit considered, just consider it that way. Please don't bring little kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if you're sick, maybe you should just forfeit the retreat fund and see and stay home, because that's kind of frustrating too. Share, and the other thing too, if you know how to do something, share your knowledge. People love to learn these retreats. It's so exciting to see everybody hovered over somebody as they show how to do something. This is really a chance for you to shine and, you know, just, you know, enjoy yourself that way. But I think the best thing is bring your sense of humor, bring your laughter, and have fun at a retreat, because, hey, you're doing what you love, you know?
I know. How much more fun could a person have than going and sewing with your buddies for the whole weekend?
Yeah. And the stories are, you know, they're incredible. They last for years. And just, you know, it's very fun. And I enjoy the retreat on both sides of it. But my big goal, and I said it on Facebook the other day, is I want to go to a retreat where I'm not in charge.
Yeah.
So, oh, man. Wouldn't that be a great time?
It would. We'll have to hire somebody to put a retreat on for us, Roseanne. So
yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. So. This has been great. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on again. Thanks so much for including me, Pat.
Well, thank you. This was chatting with Roseanne Kermes of Rosebud's Cottage, and you can just go out and check out her blog. And we're done for this show. It's American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit our website, allpeoplequilt.com, and we'll be back next week with another show.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.